You're listening to Voices of Your Village. This is episode 183. I got to hang out with one of my favorite humans, our go-to occupational therapist, Lori Goodrich. You've heard Lori on episode 4, where we talked about an overview of the sensory systems. And then she joined me in our village membership for an expert Q&A, where our village members got to pop in all of their questions about sensory regulation and how it relates to their kiddos or in their household. We went through all the questions. It was super fun to hang out with Lori and our village members. And I wanted to give you a snapshot because there were so many nuggets in this Q&A. We hung out for a little over an hour, but here's just a little sneak peek into that hour. If you are interested in becoming a village member, it only opens a couple times a year, and you can always head on over to seedandsow.org/membership to get on the wait list so that you know when it opens. We have so many goodies in there, but really we're focused on diving deeper into this work with folks who are ready, who want more support and guidance, who want access to our team to ask questions, and things like this expert Q&A. We poll the village members to hear what they want more of and what they want to dive deeper into, and then we pull in experts to help support that. Lori is also coming to Mama's Getaway Weekend. She is doing a live Q&A with me there as well. So if you want to come join us, we have a few tickets left. Mama's Getaway Weekend is September 25th and 26th in Watertown, New York. It happens once a year. It's the only place that I am in person this year. Head on over to mamasgetawayweekend.com to snag your ticket and come pick Lori's brain in September. All right, folks, let's dive in. Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, Alyssa Blass Campbell.
Hello, hello, folks. Just hanging out is something I've missed so much, and I'm very much looking forward to getting back to the live Q&As on Wednesdays with y'all. And Mariana, thanks for letting me do this with Lori today, because hanging out's my favorite, but really like hanging out and talking about sensory systems is my all-time favorite. So I'm jazzed that we get to do that together. Hi, Lori.
Hi.
Lori, I think everyone in the village knows who you are at this point. We talk about you all the time. So, but Lori is our OT, our go-to OT over here, and someone I have had the privilege of working with in person with in my classroom, and have just never stopped working with, because getting nerdy with you is so fun.
Same.
We have bunch of questions in here that I'm just going to throw at you and we can kind of dive into.
Yeah.
A bunch of people popped in questions that also couldn't be here today, that the recording will be up in Kajabi. So yeah, I'm going to dive right in.
All right, let's do this.
Okay. One of the things I was super jazzed about when I was reading through these, because I think it's really interesting and fun, is oral motor stuff. There are a few questions about oral motor. So I'm going to throw this one at you. My 2.5-year-old has always been oral sensory seeking, if that's the right term. He uses a pacifier for sleep currently, but we're getting ready to end it. What are some other ways we can help him meet this need, especially at night?
That's a great question. And I know I always botch the difference between coping strategies and coping mechanisms that Steve uses.
But mechanisms for us are not long-term. Strategies are long-term.
I know there's a difference. I can't remember which one's which. Okay, so strategies are long-term ones, right? So that idea of you're like, we're going to transition away from something that's been working for them, your child, and what else can we use to kind of meet the need that they're getting met by the pacifier? And we know that oral motor is one of our prime regulators. I'm sure I'm not the only, I just saw Alyssa taking a drink from her cup. I have mine. You know, I have a colleague that used to chew on pens. Like, we use these things as adults too. It's actually one way of downregulating your nervous system. The sucking and resistive chewing are two ways that we downregulate our nervous system. So if I was thinking of replacement things, and I do get asked this for lots of age kids of like, they're doing this, they're chewing on their shirt, they have a pacifier. You could think of other oral inputs if that's something that that child really likes. So even things of getting like intensity into their mouth, like a chewy tube, or, you know, they make toothbrushes, like rubber toothbrushes that look like bananas that you can chew on, just to give some other ideas of how do I actually give some of that type of input. If sucking is a really important part of that, you know, you might do like, you know, maybe part of dinner time is like always having a drink through a straw as a way of giving some of that resistive suck so that they're getting that kind of input as a regulator at different times during the day. The other thing you can do is go down a different route. If you're like, oh, they're oral seeking, but they need that for like a really long time for it to work, you might think of big body things also. So if your child likes like deep pressure or muscle input, you might think of things like, you know, the burrito, like burrito roll-ups, or those kind of things that you can do during bedtime, like around if you're reading books or something like that, you could add it in there. And that's another way of downregulating the nervous system.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Yeah, Rad, that proprioceptive input. These folks are familiar with proprioceptive and vestibular input. So you can throw that at them too.
Love it.
Yeah. One of the things I think I remember you saying to me when I was teaching was that the inner ear is right there, right? And so it's so close to this whole situation, the mouth, the sucking, the chewing, the whatever, that sometimes vestibular input could be what they're after or seeking. Is it true?
Yeah, that you have such a good memory, Alyssa. So in general, putting something in your mouth wouldn't necessarily activate that, but if you're doing vibration, so like an electric toothbrush, how the mechanism that we register, if anyone's interested, Alyssa and I are nerdy and probably like this, hopefully other people do too. It's actually a little mechanism in your inner ear, and vibration is one way to tap into it. It's sometimes when like, have you ever been near like a really vibrating truck, and I feel dizzy sometimes. I have a really sensitive movement system, but that vibration can kind of fake out your movement system. So in general, putting general things in your mouth wouldn't activate your vestibular system, but certain things can.
Okay, that makes sense. Also made me think with Sage is super sensitive. It doesn't need a lot of vestibular input. Loves proprioceptive. Mm-hmm. And we were at a wedding this past weekend and we used the noise canceling headphones, but if he was still clearly like would get dysregulated by the sound, and it was for sure vibrations from this music. I said to him, like, have weddings always been this loud? And I just didn't know.
And I work with adults that, you know, they're describing things and I'm like, you have a sound sensitivity And you also have a movement sensitivity because sound comes in through air and comes in through vibration. So you're getting it through two, and that's bone, and the bone called bone conduction. But like you can be overwhelmed by both of those or one of them. So it's not super surprising that headphones will block out sound, but they're not going to take the, they're not going to take the vibration part out.
Yeah, that is so interesting. And then Zach, who loves and craves vestibular input, is a drummer. And I'm like, yeah, this is all adding up.
It kind of depends on what you want to move towards. Like I know I've worked with, you know, I work with lots of kids with different needs. And like sometimes the kids are older and the parents are noticing like, you know, it's their only strategy or, you know, maybe their food progression's not happening the way they want it to, you know, and there's pacifiers are totally fine. I don't have anything. I don't have an issue with pacifiers, but sometimes the movement pattern you're getting out of that can get in the way of eating patterns. It's not a definitive, like if you have a pacifier, you're going to have feeding problems, but sometimes those things go hand in hand. So having, I also think having a variety is always good for kids, but like some people, my colleagues and I joke, like we like different fidgets. I like ones that move really rhythmically and they like squishy ones, like and other people like different things, but like some people really like sucking. And some people like chewing, and both have a regulatory benefit. So sometimes it's paying attention to like, what are my kids, what did they seem to really go for? And even those, you know, those like, they're they make mesh ones and like silicone ones that you can put food inside of and suck.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to do food at night, but you know, something like that, just to like, if you're like, we're trying to break out of the pacifier and like no pacifier might be too tricky, like things that are variations that look like pacifiers are a good way to kind of just get away from the one thing and move away from something as you're trying to work towards things.
Yeah. And just as that, Katie, I think is in our sleep program, but for us for sleep, we're totally fine with mechanisms for sleep. That like, it's not something that we're like, we need to move from mechanisms to strategies, which is what we try to do throughout the day for kiddos as much as possible. Just with the idea of like, you might not be in a boardroom with a lovey down the road. What are you going to tap into?
Right.
But you could sleep with a lovey and forever. So right. Have at it. My super active, almost 6-year-old still jumps on me all the time and attempts to climb me like a tree. I have a bad back and it scares me when I get jumped on out of the blue. Fair. I have an extremely low tolerance for this behavior and remind her every day that she can't do this to my body. And I have other great options available for her, an indoor climber, swing, trampoline, gym mat, circus rings, yoga ball, a hammock, you name it. How do I make her stop? I sound like a broken record and it hurts.
Yes. Yes. I have a 8-year-old nephew who does that with my sister. And I'm always like, thank goodness that's not me, because I have a really bad back. And like, he would probably actually hurt me. You know, she's okay with it to a degree. And then she's like, get off of me. So that's such a, it's great. It sounds like you really thought about like, what are some great options for different sensory tools? It sounds like you have so many going on there. Sometimes families that I work with, the kids are, they're seeking input, but they're also seeking connection. So if you're like, wow, I'm giving them all these input choices and they're really not picking them, it might be what they want is, you know, input plus connection. That doesn't mean jump all over me. It could be, what can we do together that's physical? So, you know, if you were doing like the yoga ball is a great example of like, let's play steamroller. Like I roll the ball over you, then you can roll, you know, or maybe you can roll the ball over me. Things that are still going to be that sort of relational connection along with the sensory input might be something to try. I also know from my nephew, the longer he's been doing the thing that he does for as long as I can remember. And he's like, he's big. He's like 75 pounds. He's not little. I just saw him and was like, when did you get so big? Knowing that it takes a long time to like break patterns that you're in, I think for all of us as humans, that like if a person's been doing something, whether that's a child or adult, over and over and over again, it just takes time to kind of get in the habit of, you know, get moving away from that and building up other strategies. But I would try pairing, if you haven't already tried it, pairing the input with connection and relationship and seeing if that changes it to a degree.
I love the note of not just connection, but connection with input. Like what can we do? That's not just, are you trying to connect with me and like, we can go draw, which cool if that works too, but maybe they do also need that input in pairing those together. I finally listened to the Voices of Your Village podcast. So the episode with us, Lori, episode 4, and was so interested to hear about the social component. Can you say more about how sensory plays into something like asking for a toy back if another child takes it? For example, seeing my 2.5-year-old struggle with this, and I had ascribed it to the pandemic, lack of social interactions, but I wonder if I should be looking for patterns. 100% this is an issue for me as a child and persists as social anxiety in adulthood. Tips for supporting my kiddo and tips for me. So I'm wondering if what she's saying is the organizational planning and like being able to navigate that social group of like sharing a toy or connecting with others.
Right. I'm just talking to a colleague of mine at the speech therapist about how complicated social skills are, you know, as children that are learning them and as adults that are still continuing to like, you know, have different relationships, you know, with different types of different people and different dynamics that play out. They're super complicated. Certainly sensory processing is not the only one. So I just want to be clear about that, that it's not like, oh, this is the only thing that matters. There's lots of other sort of, you know, communication skills, language skills, reading nonverbals. There's a lot of things that come into play for social skills. From a sensory perspective, some of the big things I think about is, and Alyssa, I know the triangle when you were like evolving that, I was like, think of it like sensory is at the bottom. The bottom of like, it's how we function as humans. It's, you know, not just for motor skills or paying attention or sleep. It's like how we just function in general. So if I'm thinking about social skills, I'm thinking like, wow, that's a really integrated skill that requires a lot of things to be happening. But like, what do I know that I can tap into how to support someone doing their best in that? And one of the biggest ones is being regulated.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck. And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it? We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking
It. Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
So if you're going into, and that could be regulation from too much stimulation. It could be regulation from I'm feeling anxious and I know this is hard for me. And that could be a child or an adult. That's not exclusive to any age.
Yeah.
But like,
I was wondering how the interceptive system might play into this.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, do I know that I get dysregulated? You know, that could be, I mean, a young child wouldn't necessarily be fully tapped into that, but we do want to be thinking about it. So interceptive is like, you know, butterflies in your stomach, you know, or for me, like tension in my jaw, you know, things that like reading your body cues of how you're feeling. And then those connect to they connect to your emotions, right? So like me knowing butterflies in my stomach, it means I'm nervous about something. So there is being able to read body cues, and you know, for a younger child that's still expectedly developing those skills, it might be an adult saying, oh, I know they're getting nervous about this. How can I help downregulate their nervous system? So they have the best chance of accessing their best skills. Yeah. Other things that come into play that Alyssa just mentioned are like your planning or motor planning skills, which is like, I can figure out how to do something that could be like a dance move or like someone asking me to do something. And I can take that verbal information and compute it to like a motor function. So like, I want to play with the toy, or like, how do I actually do that? Or can I even be flexible enough to know, like, if I give that toy, I'm going to get it back. Now, those are expected things. All kids go through the like, I don't want to share, give it back, I'm going to like pull on your hair. All kids do all those things. But sometimes when it's, you know, if you're looking at other kids that you're like, oh, you know, other kids are sort of developing the area, they seem more comfortable with it. You know, those kind of things, it might be like, I'm wondering what's getting in the way. You know, is it that there's language pieces of like, can I organize my language enough to explain what I'm asking for? There's a lot of things that come into play with social capacities, but from a sensory perspective, the two that I'm often thinking about are, is this person in a regulated enough state to even access doing this? Mm-hmm. And if that feels like the thing that's going on with the kid, I might do like some regulation activities beforehand, depending on what works. It could be some of the oromotor things we've talked about. It could be, you know, bouncing on a yoga ball, or sometimes just riding on a swing can be really regulating for a child before they get into that situation. Yep. Might be something to think about. And then if there's a planning challenge of like, I'm having a hard time understanding this, I like practicing with adults. A lot of the kids that I work with do well with, you know, they're getting the skills down and they just need to polish, you know, what do I say and what do I do? Kids are more or less predictable than we are. So it's not always the easiest thing to like mimic the thing, but just getting some languaging down and like what to expect and what, you know, what might happen. They might say you can have the toy and they might say you can't have the toy, you know, just so they start to get an idea of what might actually happen in a given situation.
Yeah, that pre-teaching. You know, part of Lauren and I diving into the SET method and getting to where we are now was that we were noticing that everything we had access to in social emotional learning was so heavily social focused.
Right.
And that you can't do that work. As you said, there are so many things that go into it without doing the emotion work first. Mm-hmm. And that like a kid's not going to be able to share if they don't feel safe or whatever the scenario is, if the emotions aren't addressed first. And furthermore, with that triangle of growth, if our sensory systems are dysregulated. And so that came up for me of like at 2.5, I'm largely focused on the sensory and emotional component and not super focused on the social component yet. So like when we build that body awareness for them and help them build that relationship with themselves, then we can move into the social component in a whole different way.
Yeah, that's totally true. I think if I understood that question right, it sounded like maybe the parent was also feeling a little bit like, I'm not sure about what to do about it. You know, I think sometimes I know I've had situations that I'm like, I'm working on this skill as a therapist because I need to be able to help kids. I think to some degree, there's some empathy that it can exist in there. Like you're like, this is hard and it's different for everybody. Yeah. Like social development.
Totally.
But yeah, those are situations that like, if you're in a, like a preschooler, like a toddler classroom, you're seeing the adult intervene a lot more and support because the kids can't do it themselves. You know, they need adults to be in there helping.
So much scaffolding.
And then as you get into the older classrooms, you see that still exists, but you're seeing kids start to be able to do some negotiation on their own because they've had all that modeling, you know, and their sensory emotional systems are, you know, more developed than they were, you know, a couple of years ago. So it's sort of, I think, expectation setting. I know I feel like sometimes we expect little kids to act like adults and they're not, you know, they're just not, no matter how verbal they are, their skill sets are different than ours. So I think like, you know, realizing that those are things to expect for young kids is also important for us as adults.
Yeah. I also, one of the things that I have found helpful when we are working in those social pieces, you mentioned the pre-teaching and also getting curious about, tell me what your plan was. Like if that child has a plan for their toys, maybe they have this whole train set and it's all set up and they envisioned this play to go a certain way. And now somebody else is stepping into it and it's messing with their plan. But like, and this happens with adults too. Like, let me know what your plan is. Between my husband and I all the time of like, oh, I had a plan and an expectation and I didn't communicate it. Maybe wasn't even aware of it. And now he's stepping in and doing something else and it's messing with my plan. And being able to have that cognitive flexibility, first we need awareness around what was our plan and what are we nervous about if this person comes in and uses this toy. You mentioned like maybe they aren't sure they're going to get it back, or maybe they're nervous if they give that kid the car that kid's going to knock down their block tower with that car. You know, like really diving into that curiosity with kids to find out more about what's happening inside that maybe we aren't hearing from them yet.
Right. I love that. The way I think about that sometimes, but I'm with kids in this, it's like, it could be any age kid. It could be a little kid. It could be an older kid that like, they really haven't figured out what's getting in their way. I sometimes will try to, I'll guess what I think it is. I wonder if it's this. And honestly, when I work with kids of all abilities, if you start talking about things, I feel like they feel connected in that. And like, they do start to build, you know, one of my kids today, he's three, he said, I'm sad that we're leaving, you know. I'm like, oh my gosh, like that, you know. He's like, he doesn't know what to do with this. And you know, we kind of just talked about like how much we are going to miss each. I'm on vacation next week. We're going to miss each other, and like me helping to lead him through this multiple times before, as opposed to him just throwing himself on the ground and crying, which was sort of, you know, because he was still building emotional capacity of understanding, and also like, when's Lori coming back? You know, there's a lot of things for him that he was working out.
I hope you enjoyed that little sneak peek into our expert Q&A from the Village membership. It's one of my favorite things, getting to hang out with Lori and get nerdy about the sensory systems. And if you would like to join me in asking your questions live to Lori, come join us at Mama's Getaway Weekend in September, the last weekend of September. We're hanging out in Watertown, New York, and we have a few tickets left. Come join us and ask Lori your burning questions. She'll be there live to hang out with me for a Q&A. Head to mamasgetawayweekend.com to snag your ticket today. We have just a few remaining. mamasgetawayweekend.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community for all of you to be a part of, so that we can all gather together to raise emotionally intelligent humans? Head on over to Facebook, search Seed and Sow : Voices of Your Village, and dive into that Facebook group. We cannot wait to hang out with you and collaborate on raising these tiny humans. If you're digging this podcast, head on over to Apple Podcasts, scroll down, click those stars, and leave a review. It really fills my heart to hear from all of you.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.